from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome back to my show. Writers love to tell stories of masterpieces being rejected when they were first offered to a publisher. Perhaps the most famous instance of that was when André Gide, working as an editor, turned down the chance to publish Marcel Proust's Remembrance of Things Past. How contemporary authors, poets, playwrights, journalists, and essayists have contended with that unpleasant, sometimes heartbreaking, and sometimes even motivating aspect of their profession is the topic of a new collection of interviews put together by Catherine Wald, The Resilient Writer, Tales of Rejection and Triumph from 23 Top Authors, is published by Persea Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Catherine Wald and one of my favorite novelists, Edmund White, to the show today. Hello. How are you?
Hi.
Ed, you've had a successful career as a writer. I find it hard to believe that you've received many rejection slips along the way.
Well, I did, for sure, and I think it was partly because I was sending books out in the 60s, and they always had gay content, and not just gay content, but they had middle-class gay content, which was really the sticking point. All this before Stonewall, before the beginning of gay liberation.
So when a gay editor got one of your books, he still or she still might turn it down?
Well, in particular, because in later years, I would talk to people who said, you know, who were gay editors, and they would say, well, you know, I really liked your book, but I was afraid to speak up for it in an editorial conference because people would think I was gay. And it's easy for us to forget that, you know, if you were identified as gay back in those days, you oftentimes got fired.
Mm. But having a book rejected because of the content, especially if it can be published later, isn't as rough as being told that it's just lousy.
Well, actually,
Chris Bajalian tells about somebody saying to him, become a banker.
Yes, that was one of my favorite stories from the book, especially because he recovered from the incident so quickly. He was a college student applying for a workshop, and he had to send in some of his work to a writer who he very much admired. And he waited and waited to hear whether he would be accepted. And finally, she called him into her office and sat across this big desk from him and said, Chris, I don't need to know how to pronounce your last name. Be a banker.
Hmm. Well, do some editors send specifically cruel rejection letters, or is just getting a form letter cruelty enough?
You know, from the writer's perspective, everything is cruel. I have a website called rejectioncollection.com where people send in their rejection letters and comment on how it made them feel. And I found that there are very, very cruel rejection letters, but there are also incredibly innocuous ones, and people take equal amounts of offense at both.
Saul Bellow said, I discovered that rejections are not altogether a bad thing. They teach a writer to rely on his own judgment and to say in his heart of hearts, to hell with you. That's easy for someone like Saul Bellow to say.
I had a shrink who said to me when I was dithering over a novel, he said, you should look at the book right before you send it out and ask yourself, do you really think this is the best work you can do? And if you say yes, then to hell with it. And that actually, that particular book had a very rocky reception, and that shrink's advice helped me through it.
Is Bellow suggesting here that the rejection can also stir up the creative juices?
Well, I think sometimes you just think, maybe I didn't go far enough. I mean, the thing that people find offensive, maybe I should push it and go farther. I mean, that's obviously what somebody like William Burroughs did.
Catherine, don't you say that you take rejection as a challenge?
Yes, I do take rejection as a challenge. That's how I came to write this book in the first place. It came about because I had a novel rejected, which I had written over 5 years and took 2.5 years to get rejected. And at the point that it was rejected, I was just so obsessed with rejection that I had to write about it. And I ended up writing a parody self-help book called The Reject's Way, which was universally rejected. So I then went on to do a book proposal for a self-help book, which was rejected. And then I finally came up with The Resilient Writer.
But a lot of writers would have just given up. You put a lot of time and energy, your heart and soul into something. It takes you a couple of years, and then it comes back almost immediately, perhaps the first page was read, it can be a real discouragement.
Right, and many writers give up at that point, and many of the people who write to my website have told me stories like that, and I think that's a terrible shame. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book. I want people to see that even the most famous of writers have had rejections, and it's something that you can get past. You shouldn't just stop dead when you get one or two.
Because it's possible that some potentially great writers were discouraged by early rejections, couldn't handle it, and gave up. But maybe the resilience is what makes a real great writer great.
Well, I think that's for sure true. You mentioned Proust earlier, and what's interesting is that there was a...
You've written a bit about Proust.
I have, yeah, right. I wrote a little biography of him. But there was a reader's report on Swan's Way, and for one of the early publishing houses that rejected the book, and it just said, you know, the first 100 pages, this poor child trying to go to sleep and can't manage it, and this is the dullest thing I've ever read. And I think it's true that if you didn't know what was going to come, if you hadn't really read the whole thing and seen it almost as a canonical book from the very beginning, it could be a rather soporific reading.
Well, because Swan's Way is the first volume of something he projected into a multi-volume work, but even then, it's so fabulously written and it's so full of really interesting ideas that you have to just wonder whether that reviewer was totally stupid or wasn't able to get it.
It was a very uncharacteristic book, though, for the French. I mean, for anybody, but certainly for the French, because they were famous for their very clean, simple style. And these enormous long sentences, Proust had probably learned to write because he translated Ruskin, the English aesthetician, who did write that way. And if you read Proust's translation of Ruskin, you sort of see the origins of his style.
But also, Gide said he rejected him because he thought of Proust as a kind of a gossip writer. And I wonder whether that hasn't happened to other writers as well, people who have established themselves for one kind of book and then they write another one and no longer are they, and the editor says, what's going on here?
Right. Well, there's so many reasons that books are rejected that go on behind the scenes that writers will never know about. And sometimes I think it's better that way. You have no idea whether you wrote about a story about a Hungarian mother and that person had a Hungarian mother, or if that person is having a fight with their landlord that day, or if they have a certain prejudice about a certain kind of writer writing a certain kind of thing. The varieties for being rejected are just about endless, and it's hard to figure them out. Sometimes it's better not to.
Didn't you write a piece about the incidents at Waco, Texas, that was rejected for being too personal?
Yes, that's right. And you know what? They were right. I had to go back and rewrite it. And that is the hallmark, I think, of taking a real professional approach to your writing, is understanding what it's lacking and then going back to it.
Ed, you've worked as an editor. So when Catherine says they were right, isn't that part of the whole thing? Sometimes the editor is right to reject the piece.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's an unusually mature writer who can say they're right. Because I think so many people have all their psychic energy invested in toting around their grudge and their defensiveness that it's hard for them to see. In my case, I worked for Time Magazine for 8 years at the beginning of my career, and I was so used to being rewritten and having things sent back again and again and again, cut 7 lines, add 3, that it helped me to get over being word proud. And I think that's very important for writers.
But what about when you rejected pieces that came over your desk when you were at Saturday Review? Did you think you ever turned down some that you shouldn't have, that later you regretted when you saw it appear in another competing magazine? And
I actually never had that happen. But I think that it's true, though, that you'll that what writers don't think about is that the editor is oftentimes worrying about the balance of his issue. So that, for instance, something funny, almost nobody ever submits anything funny. And something funny you'll grab right away, even if it's of slightly lower quality than something that's terribly serious and responsible.
Someone I know submitted a story to a magazine. The publisher hated it. The editor said, if you don't publish this, I will quit. It was published. It was then chosen for Best American Short Stories of the Year. So this is all about whim.
Sure, well, it is. Absolutely.
And sometimes it's about a college intern who is going through the slush pile, isn't it?
Yes, that was the case with Wally Lamb. That's a story that I tell in my book where he had been sending out a story in a sort of a disorganized fashion. He mailed it into one magazine and got a rejection back, and then he forgot that he had submitted it to that magazine and sent it again. The second time, not only did he get an acceptance, but that story won the prize for the best story of the year, and through that story, he also found an agent. So it's amazing how fluky these things can be.
My guest is Catherine Wald, or my guests are Catherine Wald, who's the resilient writer, Tales of Rejection and Triumph from 23 Top Authors, is published by Persea Books. Also here is one of those writers, Edmund White, and this is WNYC. In some cases, a writer gets early acclaim. Bret Easton Ellis, his first novel, Less Than Zero, was published when he was just 21, was a huge success, and then he started experiencing rejections for later works.
Yes, he had a terrible rejection when his book American Psycho came out. It was because there was a lot of violence toward women in it. The National Organization for Women wanted to boycott it, and the publisher, the original publisher, dropped it. And then a second publisher published it, and the reviews were absolutely scathing. But I was amazed at how well he got through that experience.
But he knew he was pushing all of those buttons when he wrote that book.
Of course he did.
And then it was made into a film.
That's right. And the book is still read today, and it's quite popular, which he was careful to point out to me.
So he feels that that's the ultimate justification.
Well, he felt that the book was judged on moralistic grounds rather than on aesthetic grounds, and that it stands on aesthetic grounds.
Stephen Dixon told me that when a story comes back from a publisher with a rejection slip, he simply throws away the rejection slip, puts the story into a fresh envelope, and mails it to another publication. And he says they all wind up getting published at some point or another.
That's what I recommended, too, in my interview in Catherine's book, is that you not anguish over every rejection, because if you really knew the people who were rejecting you, oftentimes they're idiots that you wouldn't even cross the room to talk to. And or there are people who are so overwhelmed by the number of submissions that half the things that come in they just send back without even looking at. So I think that the important thing is to have 20 stamped and addressed envelopes already. And every time it comes back, just slip it into another one and not worry about it.
Catherine, at your website, one writer says she's taken up kickboxing to combat the emotions that are stirred up by rejection.
Another, good for her.
Another one makes art out of the rejection letters.
That's right. People have done all sorts of things with rejection letters. They've papered their walls with them. Janet Fitch, when she had her first book published, put them up on the wall for a party.
She wrote White Oleander.
Yes, she's the author of White Oleander.
And she says until you have 100 rejections, you're really not a writer.
That's right. You have to have at least 100 or it doesn't count at all.
You say, Catherine, that even writers who've won Pulitzer Prizes have to face the blank computer screen every morning. So do you really think it's all that difficult? After all, writers can set their own hours. They get to look out the window a lot. There's no heavy lifting.
And they can drink as much as they want, which is one reason why I think most writers are alcoholics, because they can afford to drink. They don't have to show up at a job at 9 a.m.
I hope you're not being autobiographical here. You know,
I don't actually drink at all, but I've certainly seen a lot of my contemporaries go down the drain.
So do you have advice other than just keep on sending out your work?
Well, I think sometimes I once had a student who said to me, Mr. White, I'm going to move to New York, and I want to be a published writer, and what should I do? And I said, well, first of all, you should go to the gym, and secondly, you should get a better haircut, and if you're straight, date women who are in positions of power, and if you're gay, date men who are... No, I mean, the truth is there's so many personal and accidental aspects to being accepted as a writer that I think one should... You know, go full steam ahead on all fronts.
There's also a long learning curve to learning how to write, which is the first step, in even before you can start getting rejected.
Now, you have 23 top authors who tell their stories in this book, and people will recognize most of these names. Were they all anxious to tell their stories, or were there some who were too embarrassed?
No, actually, they all were anxious to talk to me. They were very eager to talk to me because they, as you had said to Edmund earlier, oh, you must have never gotten any rejections. They get that from a lot of people, and they want other young writers to know that, yes, everyone does go through rejection.
Did any wish that they had gotten a rejection for something that had been published and now it seems to be rather embarrassing?
Yes, Chris Bajalian, again.
Well, he should have become a banker after all.
Well, that was his first book, and he said that he once met someone who had an old copy of it that they had bought at a used bookstore, and he offered to reimburse them for it.
I want to thank you both so much for being with us today. Catherine Wald is the author of, the interviewer of the authors in The Resilient Writer, Tales of Rejection and Triumph from 23 Top Authors, published by Persea Books. And Edmund White is the fine novelist and one of the people who appears in this book. What a pleasure it's been to talk to both of you.
Thanks so much. I feel very accepted.
Yes.
No rejections here.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Leonard LoPage Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.